difficulties. In this series, where I'm covering some of the most important topics of bhakti, in particular, the significance of doing Radha Krishna Bhakti in Kaliyug. In the last few days, I've been talking about Srishti and some of the doubts that people have about Bhagwan. So some of the doubts that we cleared up were, for one, if God is omnipresent in this Srishti, why can't we experience Him? So I explained that He is divine and our faculties are material. Our senses, our mind, that's how we experience things, right? Body, senses, mind, all of that is material. So divine by nature is beyond material. That's the very meaning of divine. So no material thing can reach the divine, enter the divine world, or perceive anything divine, even when it's right here in front of us. So God is omnipresent, but only those who have surrendered to God and received His grace, and with His grace gotten divine eyes, divine senses, divine mind, only those people were able to perceive God and know God. We also brought up the doubt that if God is kind and gracious, why has He created a world with so much suffering? So yesterday I explained to you that God has not created this world out of nothing. He did not create something new. He merely manifested what was before. Because this Srishti, this creation, is an eternal cycle of Srishti and Pralay. It's not just Srishti all the time, and it's not Pralay all the time. Pralay means the destruction or dissolution of the universe. It cycles between it. God is responsible for activating the material energy, Maya, so that it takes the form of the universe. We call that Srishti. And Srishti actually means to release. Chodana, that's Srishti. So God releases Maya, and it takes the physical form of the universe, and He dissolves Maya. The universe dissolves back into a seed form, a subtle form. Just like a tree growing out of a seed and then returning back into the seed. Although trees don't do that in the world. But if a tree could do that, from its full-grown form, go backwards into its seed, that's something like what happens with the universe. It means that God has not created anything new. The mayic energy that manifests the universe has existed since eternity, and it innately has good and bad qualities. So God didn't create good and bad. Good and bad are eternal qualities of Maya. So, God merely awakens Maya, manifests Maya in this physical form, but He doesn't give Maya its qualities. So whatever is the nature of Maya, to have some good and some bad, that's how it's always been. And the souls living in Maya get more good or more bad according to their karma. That's our own doing. Our unlimited stock of accumulated past karma, the sanchit karma, out of that, we get as our prarabdh in this life, and that determines how much pleasure or suffering a person will have in this life. We'll see further ahead in the days to come that this world is neither the form of happiness nor the form of unhappiness. In other words, there substantially does not exist happiness in anything in this world, but unhappiness does not substantially exist in anything either. But that's a topic for the days to come. We also ask the question, why does God put the souls under Maya? And the answer is, He never put us here, we've always been here. Maya has existed eternally, we have existed eternally, and God is not so cruel as to take a soul from the divine world and make him suffer under Maya. No, those souls who are under the bondage of Maya have been under the bondage of Maya since eternity. God didn't put us here. When a soul becomes God realized, that's the first time he's meeting God. The very first time. So since eternity, we've been under Maya trying to reach God. This Mayic bondage has existed since eternity, but it doesn't have to keep existing for eternity in the future. If we surrender to God, the bondage of Maya is broken for that soul who surrenders to Maya, and he becomes free from Maya, free from birth and death and all kinds of suffering, and he receives unlimited gyan and unlimited anand and entrance to the divine world. The last question I brought up, which we're going to take up today, is that why is it that souls are under Maya in the first place? It's another why question, another doubt we have. God is Chaitan. God is alive. Souls are also Chaitan. They're alive. Maya is Jada. It's not a live energy. It's a lifeless, mindless energy. How can Jada Maya keep the Chaitan souls, uncountable Chaitan souls, under bondage? So we'll understand this point today. To understand that, let's first just start by asking the question, what is a soul? Who am I? Who are we? Just like when we were talking about proving the existence of God, we talked about three types of proof: pratyaksh praman, anuman praman, and shabda praman. We can use the same three types of proof to understand about the soul. Pratyaksh praman. What do we know through our own experience about the soul? Well, you can say, we see that a person is alive and then they're not alive anymore. I'm talking about just what we can directly experience with our own eyes, ears, nose, with our five senses. What can we know about the soul? We can know this much, that 1 minute a person is alive and the next person, they're dead. So then we can use anuman praman, the power of deduction, to infer that there must have been something there that's now gone. The body is still there. We can see the body's there. That hasn't changed. But now there's no life in the body. So that chetan tattva, whatever was giving life to the body, it must be gone. That we can deduce. Something else we know is that this body, when we're little kids, it's small, but the feeling of I am is there, right? We feel, even a child is conscious of its own being. So we know I am. Now the body grows bigger. The child becomes 11, 12 years old. Half size, you can say. Now the body has changed. The body has become bigger. But the feeling of I am is the same. You don't feel you've become bigger. You feel your body has become bigger. The point I'm making is that if you were the body, just like we see the body's lying there, but now there's no life in it, so we can determine whatever I am, it has to be separate from the body. Because that chetan tattva, whatever was giving life to the body, now it must be gone because now the body's here and there's no life in it. So I'm not the body. Whatever I am, I don't know, but I'm not the body. That much I can understand. Same thing with the second observation. If I am the body, then when the body's this big, and then it becomes this big, that feeling of I am should be broken, right? Because the body keeps changing. But it's not. It's continuous and the same. You always feel the same. You don't change. Your body keeps changing. Dehinosmin yatha dehe kaumaram yauvanam jara. Gita. I'm jumping ahead now to Shabda Pramarn. You'll have to excuse me. Gita says, the soul inhabiting the body has these changes from birth to being a baby to becoming a youth, a teenager, an adult, getting old, dying. But it's not happening to the soul. It's happening to the body that the soul is inhabiting. So again, we can deduce we are not the body. Otherwise, the feeling of I would also keep changing. Every person exists in and keeps changing between three states of consciousness. This is also a pratyaksh praman, something we can observe. That when we're in jagrat avastha, meaning we're conscious, we're awake, we have the feeling, I am. Now at that time, we're also aware of our body, our senses, our mind. So most of us, when we're conscious, that feeling of I am, how do we identify with ourselves? We actually identify with the body and the mind. We're not aware of anything deeper than that because we're not that spiritually elevated. At the level we are, when we're awake, we feel a connection with our body and our mind. Now when you go to sleep, now you're in swapna avastha. You're asleep and dreaming. In this state, your body is asleep and your senses are also inactive. You're not hearing, you're not seeing. But in your dream, you're doing everything. You're seeing, you're hearing, you're smelling, you're tasting, you're touching. How are you doing all of that? With your mind. So in Jagrat Avastha, you have body plus senses plus mind plus soul. In Swapna Avastha, body is minus, senses minus. Just the mind and soul. And what happens when you go into the third state, Sushupti Avastha? Your mind becomes totally quiet. Leen ho jata hai. And when you wake up, you get the feeling, Sukhamahama swapsam. Oh, I slept so peacefully, so happily. But at that time when you were sleeping, your body was asleep, your senses were inactive, your mind was inactive when you were in Sushupti Avastha, when you didn't even dream, you didn't hear anything, you didn't smell anything, you didn't touch anything, you didn't think anything, you didn't know anything. In other words, your mind, senses, body, all of that was just not a factor, not involved in your consciousness. Yet, somehow you have the awareness that I was sleeping happily. When you wake up, in other words, that feeling of I, you know, it was still there even in Sushupti Avastha. So the feeling of I am is there in Sushupti, it's there in Swapna, it's there in Jagrat Avastha. So in Sushupti Avastha, what's there? Just me, I. In Swapna Avastha, it's the me, I, plus man, your mind. And in Jagrat, it's me plus my mind plus my senses and body, Sharirendriya. What can we deduce from this? What kind of Anuman Praman can we deduce from these observations? That all these things are mine, but I am not those things. Right? What is mine is not me. Me is one thing and mine is another. So my body, my senses. It means I am not the body. I am not my senses. My mind. See, even your mind went totally dormant when you were in sushupti. But you were still there. It means you are not your mind. You're separate from your mind. So what is that thing? That we don't know. We can't know through pratyaksh pramanam. We can't even know through anuman praman. But we can know this thing. One final observation. We have been trying to enjoy the pleasures of this world, this whole life, and uncountable past lifetimes, and we've never been fully satisfied. So it means that even though our mind keeps telling us to try and enjoy the world more, and it promises us, oh, I promise today we will find happiness in this world. But you've promised me that every day that I can remember. Yes, but today it's going to happen. But we never find that perfect satisfaction. Why? Because the world is material. It's mayic. And this is proof that me, whatever that chetan tattva is, cannot be mayic. Because if it was, we would have found our perfect happiness in this mayic world. The very fact that we've been trying so hard and we're always disappointed is proof that I am not mayic. You are not mayic. You must be some divine tattva. That anuman praman we can deduce from our own observations. But we can't know much more than that. See, using pratyaksh praman, our own observations, our own perception, and anuman praman, our power of deduction, using that, we cannot know very much about the soul. We can deduce that whatever the soul is, whatever I am, it's not this body, it's not material, and it's also not my senses or my mind. That's all we can deduce. So what actually am I? We have to go to the third type of praman, shabda praman. Just like we needed the help of Vedas to know anything about God, we also need the help of our Vedas and Shastras to know about our own self. Imagine, there are some who are called pratyakshvadi. It means those who say seeing is believing. I will not have faith in God. You have to show me God. Then I will believe in God. That's pratyakshvadi. So you ask that pratyakshvadi, can you prove the existence of your own self using pratyaksh praman? No, you can't. Because you can't see yourself. You can see your body. But I just proved to you through solid logic that you are not the body. So you can see your body, you can't see yourself. You can't hear yourself. You can't taste yourself. You can't smell yourself. It means through pratyaksh praman, you can't even know your own self. And you're saying, if I don't have pratyaksh praman of God, I won't believe in God. So this pratyaksh praman is very limited. Shabda praman is much more authoritative. See, even pratyaksh praman, you can be deluded, right? You can have an optical illusion. You think you see something, but you don't. Like you see a rope in the dark or semi-dark, and you think, oh, it might be a snake. Oh no, it's not. It's just a rope. No, maybe it is a snake. I thought I saw it move. Oh no, it's just the lights that were moving from a car going by. See? With pratyaksh praman, you can be fooled. Lawyers know that even having an eyewitness of a crime is no guarantee of a conviction, because eyewitness reports are notoriously bad. If you have 5 eyewitnesses, you'll have wildly varying reports. So this pratyaksh praman is very unreliable, actually. And anuman praman is also not fully satisfactory. Shabda praman is in fact the most authoritative evidence, because it comes from those experts who are at an entirely different level than we are. In other words, God-realized saints. Or in the case of the Vedas, that's produced by Bhagwan himself. So they're telling us, the Vedas, the Shastras, they're telling us about those things that are beyond our perception and beyond the reach of our intellect, not so that we can simply gain knowledge, but so that we can clear our doubts, follow the path to God, and when we get to God, then we can have the pratyaksh praman of all of this, when we get to their level. But for now, we simply need to have enough knowledge to clear our doubts, so we can have confidence in God and a desire to meet Him, hence a desire to follow the path to God. So what do our scriptures say about this main tattva? First of all, they call it jeev. Jeev means jo swayam jeevit rahe, number one, or dusre ko jeevit rakhe. Two, jeev means that which keeps itself alive and also gives life to another. So the other is the body. Jeev is the Sanskrit name for soul, jivatma. So the soul is itself alive, chetan, jeevit. And as long as the soul is in the body is also alive. But that attribute, that chaitanya guna, the life quality, that is inherent in the soul, it is not inherent in the body. That's why when the soul leaves, the body is dead, the life is gone out of it. But as long as the soul is there, the body has that life in it. It's similar to, there's a fire, right? Now the fire has two main guna. Dahakatva, the quality of burning, giving heat. And prakashakatva, giving light. Now whatever comes in contact with the fire, be it wood, metal, a rock, if the fire's hot enough and you put that thing in contact with it for long enough, it will adopt the qualities of the fire. In other words, the object you put in the fire also starts to burn and give heat and give light, just like the fire. But are those attributes inherent in that object? No, because when the fire goes out, take the fire away, the wood is no longer giving heat or light. Something like that, the soul has this quality of giving life, being alive and giving life, and whatever it enters is also alive. It adopts that chaitanya guna of the soul. But as soon as the soul is gone, the body is dead, has no life. So in fact, the body is just a material substance that the soul inhabits, and as long as the soul's there, the body functions as a living organism, but it's not inherently alive in and of itself. The soul is. Where is the soul in the body? Right here, in the heart area, hriday. How big is the soul? There are varying opinions. Some people say that Ved says the soul is vibhu. Atma vibhu hai. Others say, no, Ved says Atma is anu hai. And still other people, using the power of their intellect, say, no, soul must have variable sizes. Because the soul enters into the body of an ant, so it must be the size of the ant, because the ant's body, the whole entire body is alive from head to toe. So if that chaitanya guna is all over the ant's body, the soul must be the exact same size as the ant. Okay, but then the scriptures say that soul can leave that body and go to another body. That soul that was born as an ant can be born as an elephant. So then, does the soul grow to the size of the elephant? And again, throughout the life, the body grows and gets bigger. So does that mean the soul keeps growing throughout a person's life? No, it doesn't make sense, because then the soul would be vikari. Whereas our scriptures say, the soul never changes its shape. Nothing can touch it. No weapon can cut it. Water cannot make it wet. It can never die. It can never be injured in any way. So the soul does not change size. Is it Anu or Vibhu? Vibhu means of unlimited size, omnipresent. And Anu means the opposite, infinitesimal, spot existent. Our scriptures say that if you take one hair, the tip of one hair, and cut it into 100 pieces, and take one of those pieces and cut that into 100 pieces, and take one of those pieces and cut that into 100 pieces, and keep doing that, as small as you can cut it, the soul is still infinite times smaller than that. Anu, infinitesimal, infinitely small and subtle. Then why are there statements in the Vedas that say Atma is Vibhu? Because the word Atma is both used for God and for the souls. Where Atma is being described as being Anu, infinitesimal and spot existent, it's for Jivatma. And where Atma is being described as being Vibhu, it's for Paramatma, Bhagwan. So sometimes just the word Atma is used, but it could be for Paramatma, it could be for Jivatma. So we have to know these things. But the soul, the individual souls, all of us, who are uncountable in number, unlimited in number, we're all infinitesimal. We couldn't all be Vibhu, right? Vibhu means omnipresent. When we're all individual souls, how could we all be omnipresent at the same time? We would limit each other, right? Where I end, you could begin. But we can't both occupy the same space at the same time. That's why there's only one God. There can't be two gods. Because God is Vibhu. He's absolute. He's infinite. He's omnipresent. So there can only be one of Him. He may have many forms. That's fine. There's only one of Him. Whereas there are uncountable souls. Because we are Anu. So we are Anu. We reside in the heart area, not the physical heart, but the spiritual heart, the center of the chest. And from that one spot, the soul gives life to the whole entire body. Just like if you apply chandan to one part of your body, the medicinal effect of that chandan is received throughout the whole entire body. Similarly, the soul exists at one place in the body, but the life power of the soul is received throughout the body. Someone might wonder that the effect of the chandan travels through your blood vessels all over your body. How is the power of the soul spread throughout the body? So the example is given, just like you have a room and you put one light in that room, that light is at one place and the whole room is around it, and the light from that one bulb illuminates the whole entire room. Whether it's a small room, like an ant, or a big room, like an elephant, that one infinitesimal Anu soul gives life to the entire body, from head to toe. Someone again may question, but I thought the guna should stay in the guni. Guni means the one in whose attribute it is. So the attribute of the soul is to be alive. That's a guna of the soul, and the soul is guni. So shouldn't that guna only remain in the soul? How does it go out of the soul and go all over the whole body? So again, the analogy is given of a flower. That the guna of the flower, the fragrance, spreads all around outside of the flower, even though the flower is only at one place. Similarly, our soul resides at one place and gives life to the whole entire body. What else does Ved tell us about ourself, our soul, that we can't know on our own? Take the mantra that I started this whole series with. Tameva vidittvati mrityumeti nanya pantha vidyate yanaya. Shvetashvatara Upanishad. Soul is in fact one of three eternal tattva. Soul, who are uncountable, all the souls, that's one tattva that eternally exists. The second is God, the third is Maya. So out of these three tattva, are they all independent? Are they all independent existences? Or is there some dependence from one to the other? Like God is dependent on Maya, or souls are dependent on God, or Maya is dependent on souls, something like that. Is there some kind of relationship, or is Maya fully independent, God is fully independent, souls are fully independent? So our scriptures say, charam pradhanam amritaksharam hara charatmana vishate deva ekah. Shvetashvatara Upanishad. Char Maya and Akshar Jeev are governed by God. He is Ish. So God is the governor of Maya, as you learned yesterday when I explained about Srishti, and God is also the governor of the souls. So souls are dependent upon God. There's a relationship between us and God. In fact, Chetanash Chetananam, Shvetashvatara Upanishad says, that Chetan quality of the soul comes from God. God resides within you and gives life to your soul. So there's a very deep relationship between the soul and God. Souls cannot exist without God. Although He didn't create us, we've existed forever, but He's the one giving life to us. Ved says, Chinmatram Shri Hare Ransham Sukshmam Aksharam Avyayam Krishnadhinamiti Prahur Jivam Jnana Gunashrayam. Souls are also Ansh of Bhagwan. Ansh. Tukura, a piece, a fraction, that's the literal meaning of Ansh. Ansh of Bhagwan. So like Bhagwan is a big block of stone and you smash it into uncountable pieces and now you have uncountable souls. We're all tukura of that big block of stone. No. Ishavasya Upanishad says, Purnasya, Purnamadaya, Purnamevavashishyate. Bhagwan is always Purn. He cannot be broken into pieces. He's always whole and complete. So then how is a soul Ansh of Bhagwan? Our scriptures are saying, Ansho nana vyapadeshat, Brahma Sutra. We're His Ansh. Mamaivansho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana Gita. All the souls are my sanatana ansh, Shri Krishna says. Ishwara ansh jiva avinashi. Ramayana also says, all the souls are ansh of Bhagwan. So what does this ansh mean? If we're not a piece of Him broken off, what does it mean to be Ansh of Bhagwan? Vishnu Shakti para prokta kshetragya khya tatha para. Vishnu Puran. Bhagwan has three main powers. One is called Parashakti. One is called Jeev Shakti. One is called Maya Shakti. Parashakti means the supreme power. Jeev Shakti, the souls, and Maya Shakti, you've heard a lot about in the last couple of days, the material power. Out of these three powers, Parashakti is called Antaranga Shakti, God's personal power or internal power. Maya is called Bahiranga Shakti, God's external power. And souls are called Tatastha Shakti. Tatastha means neither here nor there. Kotavapraveshat. Souls don't belong there or there. They don't reside there or there. Svakrita pureshva mishva bahiranta rasambaranam bhagavatam. The soul is not neither a part of or an ansh of God's swarup shakti, parashakti, his personal power, nor is jeev ansh of maya shakti. Jeev is in between the two because it's not antarang, it's not bahirang. Jeev is tatast. It means in between, marginal, like if you're on the beach. You're not in the forest, you're not in the ocean. You're on the edge, in between the two. So souls are neither part of God's parashakti, nor are they a part of his maya shakti. I can see some people's eyes are starting to cross from listening to so much heavy philosophy. Just a couple more minutes of this. We'll take a little break and continue tomorrow. Let me review that we are the soul, but we cannot know ourselves on our own. We cannot know much about what is an atma through our own observation or deduction. But through the scriptures, we can know a lot more. And the scriptures tell us that every soul is a power of God. So being an ansh of God means to be a power of God, not a tukda of Bhagwan. We're not a piece broken off of him, we're his power. So we're not part of his personal power, nor are we part of his material power. If we were a part of Maya, we would also be jada. Lifeless, mindless. So we're not a part of Maya. If we were a part of his Swarup Shakti, Parashakti, then we would have all the power associated with that. We would also be all-powerful, all-knowing, all-blissful, like God. But we're not. So we can't be said to be a part of his Swarup Shakti. Obviously, we're not a part of his Maya Shakti. So we're a part of Jeev Shakti. Jeev Shakti is in between because Maya is Jad. So it's Bahirang, external. Parashakti is all powerful. That's his internal power. We're not a part of that, but we're not Jad like Maya. We're closer to God. So we're Tatast, right next to him. But being a part of his Jeev Shakti, being an ansh of his Jeev Shakti, we are, or you can say Maya is able to have power over us. If we were a part of his Swarup Shakti, Parashakti, Maya could never touch us. Never could have, never will. But since we're a part of his Jeev Shakti, Maya can have power over us. Think of it like this. Although we're Chetan, like Bhagwan is Chetan, think of God like the sun. He's Maha Chetan. And we're Anu. We're small, infinitesimal. We're an ansh of his power. Now, the sun could never be overtaken by darkness, right? If the sun is shining in the sky, can darkness ever reign? No. If the sun is gone, then it's dark. As soon as the sun comes, darkness is gone. But, you see, this metal here, that's also shiny, right? The sun is shiny, but that's like Mahaprakash. This is shiny, but this is like a tiny unch of that prakash. So if the sun is gone and you turn out all the lights, darkness overpowers that. Because it's such an infinitesimal spark or unch of that prakash. It has an unch of prakash in it, but it's so tiny that darkness can overpower it. Souls are that kind of unch of Bhagwan. Yes, we're Chaitan, but we're so tiny, we're so Anu, that if we're away from God, Maya can keep us under bondage. When did we get away from God so that Maya could keep us under bondage? It never happened. We've been under Maya forever. We've been away from God forever. Away from Him means our back is turned to Him. And we're turned towards Maya. So we have to understand that what we are cannot be blamed on God. That's the point of all of this.